ओम गुरुर् ब्रह्मा गुरुर्विष्णु गुरुर्देवो महेश्वरः गुरु साक्षात् परब्रह्म तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। ध्यानमूलं गुरोर्मूर्तिः पूजामूलं गुरोत्पदं मंत्रमूलं गुरोर्वाक्यं मोक्षमूलं गुरोर्कृपा। ओम सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ओम शांति शांति शांति। Last night, we were looking into probably the most serious problem in life. All the rest do not have a direct bearing on life. Does God exist or not? I suppose He exists. If He doesn't exist, that's also all right. Is the world an eternal and permanent reality or not? Also, what do I care if the world is permanent or not? I am going to live for another few years. And so far as I am concerned, most of these geologists and biologists and seismographists, the fellows who study the earthquakes and so on, they all assure me that for a few years the earth is safe. I am quite content. I have no children, grandchildren to worry about. And this is what the famous Buddha was supposed to have alluded to. A young man went to Buddha. He was sitting in preaching. And this young man was a great scholar, brilliant intellect. And he belonged to the orthodox school of thought, and Buddha was not orthodox. He wanted to corner him and destroy his platform. So he went up to Buddha and said, "Lord, may I ask you a question? What do you think? Is God real? Is God real?" Buddha looked at him, kept quiet. I'll put it the other way around. Is God not real? Is God unreal? Do you deny the existence of God? Kept quiet. Don't you know? Also kept quiet. Right? Let's not talk about God. Let's talk about this world. What do you think, Lord? Is this earth a permanent reality? Matter. Permanent reality? Didn't answer. Do you deny the existence of the world as, you know, as illusion and maya, things like that? Didn't answer. Perhaps you don't know. Kept quiet. And he got angry. No, he asked 6 questions and to none of them there is an answer. Rude! This fellow pretends to be a great spiritual leader, etc., etc., sitting and talking to people all day and night. I asked him 6 questions. He didn't even say, no response. Turned to walk away. As he turned to walk away, Buddha called him, "Hey, my friend, come here. So you could talk, eh? You're not dumb, deaf and dumb." No. Further, I want you to remember that I didn't answer your questions at all. So don't go about interpreting that by silence Buddha meant so and so, so and so. This is what we are very fond of doing. We go to somebody, he did something, he did not do something. And out of that we try to draw our own inferences. So he said, "I didn't answer at all. And so please don't go and tell the people that the Buddha must have meant so and so, so and so. I didn't mean anything. He said, on the contrary, I would like to ask you a question. If you go back now and find your house burning, what would you do? Would you stand in front of the house and say, ah, fire? What does fire mean? What is the chemical composition of fire? And how is the fire lit? How was this fire produced? Did somebody smoke a cigarette and throw it there? Or was there arson? Did somebody deliberately set fire to this house? My enemies or my friends or whoever it is. My friends also could set fire to my house. You know why? To collect insurance. People do that, yeah. You have no idea what people can do. They insure their house heavily, then burn it. Go and collect insurance. Or did something rub against something else, or electric short circuit. Will I be standing in front of the house, trying to determine the cause of the fire, the nature of the fire, the origin of the fire, the existence or non-existence of the fire? No. What would you do? Immediately put it out. The first thing that comes to the mind is how to put this fire out. So Buddha said, you know that your life is full of sorrow. Why don't you remove that sorrow? That is the most important thing, isn't it? It's not so important for you if God exists or does not exist. He can look after himself very well. Yours is not the concern about the permanent existence or otherwise of this world. The world can look after itself. Why don't you do something about the sorrow that fills your heart? That's the only thing you know. It's burning. Your heart is burning. Your whole mind is burning. Every cell of your body is burning. With ignorance, with lust, anger, greed, jealousy. Why don't you do something about these? And that's all I'm asking you to do. I'm not asking you to discover God or to cover the world. None of your business. Leave all these alone. So our problem is not one of what we call these eternal verities. They can jolly well look after themselves. Our problem is, must I eat this or not? And if so, how must I eat it? How to solve, how to live, how to be here? I've got to work, I've got to function in this world. How must I function? I am a typist. Is it good to be a typist or is it not good to be a typist? Can I become a great yogi? Must I become a great yogi standing on my head for 10 hours a day? Is there something wrong with my profession itself? That's a fundamental question. Whatever I am doing, in what spirit must I do? Because the same thing, the same action can be performed in three different ways, mainly. One is as a job. Ah, I got to do it. You know, oh, these wretched bosses. But, you know, I can't possibly throw them into the sea because my paycheck is signed by them. All right, all right, all right. This fellow is the boss and I must obey him. I must do what he says. It's a very negative and very wrong attitude. It creates headache. It creates headache. As I was going to the college this afternoon, one of the gentlemen was asking me, do you get ever fatigued? Do you feel that you ever get overworked? I told him, I don't believe in overwork at all. I don't believe it is possible to overwork. I ask you a simple question. I don't know if any of you has any office job. Don't you feel tired, overworked? When you work for somebody in an office, yes? 4 o'clock. I've been working since the morning. I'm tired. I don't want to look at any paper anymore. I don't want to do any typing anymore. I don't want to do anything. I don't want to write any, even half a line more. I'm tired, fatigued. What do you do next? Powdery face. What do you do next? Get into the car and drive. Drive home. Is that a very pleasant thing to do? Does it need energy? Driving in the peak hour is... I would spend an hour more in the office rather than drive in that peak hour. Right. You go home, then what do? You drop everything, take a book or read a newspaper or talk to somebody, or maybe you answer your own correspondence, your own love letters or what have you. Didn't you say that you are tired and... your hands were getting fatigued and you're being overworked and you can't keep your head on your shoulders. But then you go back home, you don't sleep, you don't rest, you carry on till probably 11 o'clock at night. So you're not really tired, were you? But you were tired, weren't you? Of course I was tired, wasn't I? Why was I tired? Because there was a job imposed upon me. I realize I can't get out of the office till it is time, 4 o'clock. If I got out at 2 o'clock, I wouldn't get my paycheck during the weekend. So I've got to be there. It's an imposition. It's a job. It's a task. And this attitude is the most tiring thing in the world. One who leaves, whatever be the job you do, whatever it is, if you do like this, then you get tired, fatigued. The fatigue is unreal, is imaginary, it's psychological. And so I told this gentleman, I've never suffered any fatigue. I've never been overworked. I have tried this. For about 2 or 2.5 years, I've never gone to bed before 2 o'clock at night. Never, not a single day. Daytime also we used to work in the ashram. There's a lot of work to do, master's work, and some part of the work which involved the intellect, it is best to do at night when there is no disturbance. From 8 to 1, 2 in the morning, that is best time to sit down and think about writing work, intellectual work and so on. There is no fatigue at all. Why? There is pleasure, joy. I am serving my master. One day I experienced the other one. I am in charge of correspondence in those days. And one day I counted the letters in the tray that had to be answered. There were 50 of them. I said to myself, I'll finish it tonight. So he went on. Bang, 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 bang. It was 4, 4:30 in the morning. The tray was almost nearly complete. So the incentive was not, the push was not there. You know, if there is more letters, there is this anxiety to finish it. The anxiety is also a necessary affair, necessary stimulus. That was also not there. Just one more left. I put it in front of me and did something. You wouldn't believe it if you hadn't undergone this experience. I want really to press this finger, this one goes down. I'm looking at my hand. It's no fun, no joke. Complete lag, absence of coordination. Complete loss of coordination. I want to do this, something else goes away. I'm looking at my hands, it looks as though it's somebody else's hand, not mine at all. They don't respond to me. They don't respond to me. I want to tap the space bar, something else goes down. I said, impossible. That is what will happen. So that there is absolutely nothing called overwork in this world. You can't do it. Your body will refuse to work. It will collapse. In the same way, there is no such thing called unbearable suffering. It's only in your imagination. Huh? Somebody asks, I heard you had an operation and you had some trouble. How was it? Oh, this pain was unbearable. Did you pass out? No. So you bore it. So you bore that pain. How was it unbearable if you bore it? If it is unbearable, how could you bear it? What happens if you have unbearable suffering? Immediately you will pass out. At once. Before you can even tell this lady, my pain is unbearable, you're out. You can't finish that sentence. You are out, you pass out. There is no such thing called unbearable suffering, and there is no such thing called overwork. Divine grace has built all these mechanisms in. Into this body has been built the power to switch off, like this thermostat. Huh. Even these thermostats sometimes fail. This one never fails. Your inside built-in thermostat never fails. You reach a certain limit and you want to push yourself and go beyond that limit, shuk, collapse. Call the ambulance. You think you can bear this pain, 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 shuk, call the ambulance. That's all. That's all your endurance capacity, and more than that will not be allotted to you. I cannot have more than what I deserve, my deserts. Not possible. Realizing this, therefore, if I avoid this attitude of a task, a job to be done, then I don't get fatigued. The next attitude is one of duty. It's not so bad, not so fatiguing, not so tiring, not so boring as the other one. But one who does his duty has usually his face long, getting longer and longer and longer and longer and longer. You know? Yes. I have to do. Not that he's torturing me to do it. But you know, I have to do it. He's my husband and he's sick. 1 inch longer. Every time the husband gets sick, the face grows 1 inch longer. Because I'm serving my husband, you know. I'm duty bound. So, it's not so bad, but one fails to enjoy life. Life is not meant to pull long faces. Leave it to those religious people. They are clever. they are the ones who need to have longer faces. It's good for them. We don't have to. We can enjoy life. I don't know if this sort of situation exists in American society. For instance, this can happen in Indian family. A young or a middle-aged woman in a house, she doesn't like her mother-in-law at all. She lives, the old woman also lives in the same house. And when the mother-in-law wants her to do something, the daughter-in-law always has a headache or some trouble. She doesn't want to do it. When the husband asks her to do the same job, let's say cooking something, well, it is a duty, all right, I'll do it. It's my duty to serve my husband. But when her own son or son-in-law or somebody else comes, she jumps and she has got the energy of all the world in her. Especially a little child. The child comes and asks for the same thing that the husband asked or the mother-in-law asked. When the mother-in-law asked, it's not possible today. I'm tired, too tired. I'll do it tomorrow. When the husband asks, oh, what a nuisance. It's my duty, I'll do it. When the child asks, it's a pleasure. Why is this? So these three attitudes are possible. And if while doing my job, I adopt the third attitude, what a joy. And that is yoga. That's what the story that I told you yesterday illustrates. Doing whatever job I have to do, that is allotted to me. You can say it's karma, you can say it is God's grace or God's will or anything, any. One has no doubt about this, that this job is there for me to do. I am put in the job. I am placed in this position. Must I do everything? May or may not. It's up to you to decide. As I tried to point out yesterday, I observe the whole situation. I study myself. I look at myself. I look at the job. If it is square peg and round hole, and I don't seem to fit into it at all, then the job will drop from my hands. I can't do it. It's not for me. It's not meant for me. It is not meant for me. So eventually, there is a thing called, this is meant for me, that one has to decide oneself. I am not talking in terms of fatalism or predestination or karma or nothing. I do not know. Each one can discover, this job is meant for me. Now, how must I do that job? That is what I want to know. I don't have to do it as a task. I don't even have to do it as a part of my duty or things like that. But I can enjoy it. And when I enjoy doing it, that is yoga. When shall I enjoy doing it? Why does the mother so spontaneously almost desire to serve her child? Because there is love. And you will immediately notice, where there is love, there is no ego. If the ego was there, then there is immediately there is a contract. In the case of, for instance, a husband and wife, both of them have their ego in full function, and so the wife asks, I'll do this for you, what are you going to do in return? What about a coat for me, new one, or a new hat? I don't know if this happens here. This happens even in India. The husband wants something to eat or whatever it is, and the wife prepares it, duty bound, and while she gives it to him and he is eating and enjoying it, she will remind him, you promised to give me the ring or whatever it is, what about it? Make sure then and there, huh? This is the contract, and I did the so and so to you, what about me? Make sure they catch time by the forelock. Take time by the forelock. Don't wait for him to change his mind. Rub it in. But in the case when she gives the same thing, does the same thing to the child, she doesn't expect anything in return. So there is absence of the ego there. That's pure love. If this love is extended to cover everybody, all my actions in my life, that's yoga. The creator of my problems is that veil of the ego that is standing between you and me, and therefore that is standing between me and the ultimate reality, God or whatever it is. So how to remove this? Or how to remove this idea of me from my mind? For if I can do that, then the whole life is full of bliss. Full of joy. There is absolutely nothing. The moment this me, the selfishness, the ego, the greed, the lust, the craving is removed, then life flows smoothly, unobstructed. It is this thin veil that appears to be a ghost in my life, haunting my life. If this me is removed from this life, wouldn't it be wonderful? There's no obstruction at all. Life flows on smoothly, evenly. Someone asked a question. What is the cause of old age and death? What is the cause of old age and death? There is only one cause, birth. If I was not born at all, will I ever become an old man? If I was not born at all, will I have to die? No. So, why do I suffer? Because the I exists. If the I did not exist at all, will it suffer? That's the simplest solution. That is the simplest solution. How to remove this idea of I from the mind? By introducing another idea into the mind. Instead of this feeling of I exist, I want this, I want that, I want this, arising in my mind constantly, if some other idea is made to arise in his mind constantly, then naturally the I idea doesn't come. This is where the great yogis of India invented this remarkable yoga called Japa Yoga. Take a mantra and repeat it constantly. Take any mantra you like and repeat it constantly. The mind doesn't have time to create this idea of I. The story is told of a young man who was living in a village. In those days, in ancient days, when these jet planes and motor cars and this lovely transport system, polluting transport system, did not exist, people went about in bullock carts and so on. And in those days, the swamis and the ascetics usually went on foot. They didn't even ride these bullock carts and so on. And in order to save them the trouble and the bother of walking about in rain, you know, in India, the monsoon has got a season. Only 3 or 4 months in the year it rains, it doesn't rain otherwise. And during that period it rains, definitely. So in order to save these swamis the trouble of walking about in rains, they instituted a beautiful custom, a tradition, that during those 4 months, the swamis, wherever they are, they will stay put. Otherwise, we are not allowed to stay in one place for more than 3 or 4 days. That is the rule, that is the tradition. So this rolling stone, not this other, this pop music rolling stones, this rolling stone, as it goes on, it stops when the rain starts. It is said that one great swami or yogi camped in that particular village, and this young man served him heart and soul devotedly. The time was coming when the swami would leave that village and go on. The monsoon was over, and on the last day he called this young man. He said, my son, would you like to have some present from me as a token of my appreciation and gratitude? What would you like to have? Ask anything. And the young boy said, what, Swami? What are you going to give me? I am doing your room, I am doing your bed, and I have been washing your clothes and everything. There is no lock, there is no key, and I know exactly what you have. I have got a complete inventory of what you have. You have nothing to give me. How do you offer? He said, don't tell anybody. I have got a ghost at my command. You can't see, I can see it. And whatever I want, it will bring and give me. Now tell me, do you want something? Ah, is that so? Then, not something, sir, I want a lot of things. If it is a ghost that's going to give, fulfill all my desires, I've got plenty of them. And moreover, I feel, he said, I really can't name one thing which I would like to have. Imagine a poor man living in a hut or a tent having a Cadillac. He does say, I don't have a garage. Imagine a man having a big palace and not even having a motor car. Again, looks silly. People will laugh at me. So I think I can prepare a list of 100, 150 items which I would like to have. So the young man said, why don't you leave the ghost with me for a few days, for a couple of months? I'll let him do all that I have on this list. Then I'll send him back to you. The Swami said, that's not difficult. I can easily let the ghost be with you for 2 months, but then it's very difficult to maintain it. You know, the contract is that if you allow the ghost to remain idle even for a single moment, it will kill you, destroy you. He said, that's all right. 2 months I'll keep him busy. Don't worry. Then the yogi called up the ghost, introduced him to the new boss. He said, here is your new boss. Do all that he tells you. And come back to me after 2 months. The ghost said, yes, sir. The yogi was about to go and told the young man, if you are in difficulty, think of me, I'll come. If you are in difficulty, just think of me, I'll come. Went away. And the ghost turned to the young man, I'm at your service, sir, and then I suppose the yogi told you that you must keep me busy always. Don't let me be idle for a few minutes, then I'll eat you up. He said, all right, go and build a palace for me. He said, yes, sir. And the ghost went away. This young man drew up a list of the items that he wanted, one after the other. And he was relaxing. An hour later, the ghost would turn in and he said, sir, it's ready. What is ready? Palace. Good heavens. In an hour, he said, yes, I am a ghost, don't you know? Now, the young man was in real trouble. Right, he said, the next item, go and get some Persian carpet. 15 minutes, the Persian carpet's ready. This fellow was in real quandary. He has a lovely house, he has the carpet, and he has the motor cars, and he has this, and he has that, and he has this, and he has this, he has this. He has 100 other things, but he can't enjoy them. Haven't you seen such people in this world? Yeah, probably here you have seen. Most of these millionaires, I recognize who a millionaire is by the newness of the furniture in the house. They have never been able to sit there. As new as the day on which they were bought. Huh? They have a lovely house. They can't stay there. Downtown. In a small dungeon-like office. There this poor fellow has to sit and work in order that he may maintain that empty house. Yeah, it's true. And he has to keep up that, he has become a millionaire or multimillionaire, whatever it is. He has to keep up that status, that position. And it's, I don't know if you have ever tried to climb a sand dune. You can't pause for half a second. You come down. Huh? Even to stay where you are, you have to keep by and cycling all the time. Struggling. So, I have all these things. When am I going to enjoy them? The millionaire eventually does enjoy, I don't know enjoy, does get into his bed when he is paralyzed, Parkinson's disease. Then he is confined to bed. Does he enjoy the bed? He doesn't even know what it is. That is what the story illustrates. He had a ghost at his command. He can get what he wants. But then, to keep this ghost active is trouble enough. So, he ticked off one by one. Eventually, when he came to just one or two items, he got panicky. He sent away the ghost on some errand and thought of the Swami. And the Swami came. Swami, please take the ghost away. He said, no, I told him in your presence that he will be here with you for 2 months. He said, yo, see. He comes back with this, after finishing this errand, I have no, just one more job. And after that, I am finished. He's going to eat me up. I told you already. It's difficult to maintain this ghost. He said, all right. He's coming in a minute. Please, save me, says this young man. All right, do like this. And the Swami whispered something into his ear and he disappeared. The ghost came in. Now this young man was sitting straight. He's got the trick. As soon as the ghost came and said, yes sir, here you are, then the next job, said, all right, forget it. There is the yard in front of the house. Yeah, put up a marble pillar 100 feet high. And there you are, sir. Right, go up. And the ghost went up. Yes, sir, come down. And he said, yes, sir. No, yes, sir, no. Go up and come down till I ask you to stop. Up and down till I ask you to stop, okay? Right? That was the trick that the Swami taught him. And then the ghost knew that the yogi had given him the trick. That is how the ghost could be subdued. So he fell at his feet. Oh, I know that the Swami has told you how to conquer me. Good. Now hereafter I'll go. I won't trouble you. And whenever you want, I'll come back to serve you. That ghost is the mind, isn't it? Our own, your mind, my mind. That ghost is the mind. That ghost is the one that makes this wall. Me. Me first. Everything me. I want this. I must have this. Yo, not she. I must have this. This I. This is the ghost. And I can't satisfy this ghost. Impossible. Do what you like, you are not satisfied. Get what you like, you are not satisfied. And there is only one thing that has to be done, and very urgently done. That is, the idea of I must be replaced by something else. Or, the mind that produces this idea of I must be subdued. It must be given some other job, so that it doesn't make this, manufacture this I thought all the time. I is also a thought. I am so and so. I want this. This I also is a thought. So, in order not to generate this thought, I must provide this mind with some work. That is what we do in japa, in repeating a mantra. If you can mentally visualize a pillar, marble pillar, from, let us say, the solar plexus up into the brain, as a matter of fact, there is a pillar, it's called the vagus nerve, connecting your solar plexus with the brain, with the base of the brain. And supposing you are able to go up and down this pillar, repeating your mantra once when you inhale, repeating your mantra again when you exhale, and if this goes on and on and on and on and on, then the mind is busy, isn't it? The mind is extremely busy doing this, it leaves you in peace. It leaves you in peace. If this is not there, man cannot have peace. We are thinking we are working in this world, and somebody may even bluff himself that he is working in the right spirit, in the spirit of duty, in the spirit of this, that, etc., etc., etc. It's very doubtful, very doubtful. I have seen even people who are patriotically devoted to their chair in the office. I'll tell you the story, something which actually happened. This is not a joke. There was a man who was a civil servant in the government of India, New Delhi. And for years, he used to go to his office at 9:30 in the morning and work till 5 or 6 in the evening. Go home, play with his wife and children for a little while, and then go to sleep. So the office was his life. And even, you know, in those days, we could, if we wanted, go to the office even on Sundays. Nobody would object to it. Even on Sundays, he would go and do some work. He's so devoted, patriotic. Patriotic duty and feeling and all sorts of things. And he reached the good old age of 55. And he had to retire. The office staff gave him a tea party, cocktail party, farewell party. He had it on Saturday afternoon, went home. Sunday he went to some temple or something like that. Monday morning, he gets up as usual, 6 o'clock, and he goes into the bathroom. The towel is not there, this toothbrush is not there, this is not there, this shaving kit is not there. Where is my shaving kit? What is it? And the wife comes and tells him, what's wrong? Why are you in such a hurry? That's all she asked, I believe. I believe that's all she asked, nothing more. Why are you in a hurry today? You're not going to office. That was a shock. No office? Oh, oh, no office. And the man said this no office, two words, like a mantra, for the next 6 months. Mad. Yes? Yes, he became crazy. From that moment, anyone went to see him, he just said, no office. He didn't know what to do with himself. That was a shock. For him, life meant getting up in the morning, having his shave and his bath and his breakfast and go to the office. 9 o'clock, go to the office. It was just impossible for him to think of a life other than office. So we can bluff ourselves that I am not attached to my job, I'm doing it in a wonderful spirit and so on. Are you doing it in a wonderful spirit? How do I know that this I is not building its own nest for me? So, in its place, I erect this pillar. This job is over. Immediately, the mind falls back into this. Om, 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 om. And this thing can go on. This thing can go on till after death. It doesn't depend upon anything at all, whether I have a family or no family, whether I have a property or no property, whether I have a job or no job, nothing. It doesn't depend upon my good health, ill health, nothing. So long as there is life breath, this repetition of a mantra can go on. I build what my master used to call a background of thought. The whole mind I have saturated with this mantra so that it goes on. I don't say automatically, but naturally, spontaneously, it goes on and on and on and on. Some job that I am doing is over. The mind is busy. It's not creating a new I thought, a new ghost thought, a new craving. It's there, content. Then the next piece of work comes along, I do it. And I'm more energetic because my whole being is there, fresh. I'm not carrying over the load of the previous job onto the next one. My mind is fresh, my whole being is fresh. I attack that job, that's over. Immediately the mind falls back there. It's refreshed. Wonderful. And there's no madness. There is no possibility of madness. The ghost is laid. The ghost is busy. Not only busy, I have given that ghost such a wonderful job that it is not only prevented from harassing me, but it is, on the contrary, manufacturing energy, peace and happiness within me. The mantra gives me all these, peace, happiness, joy, energy. If this is done, then that veil of the ego or selfishness that stands between you and me, that stands between me and the ultimate reality, is gone. Whatever job I am in, I do satisfactorily. I don't cling to the job. It's there for me to do, I'll do it. And when it is gone, it's gone. You see, this is very important. I was doing something, and naturally I was doing it devotedly. I enjoyed doing it. It's gone. I let it go. I withdrew into this om. I withdrew myself into this om. This om goes on. So that job which was finished has gone. The next one comes along. Life brings millions of opportunities of doing things wonderfully. Nobody need be unemployed in this world. I pointed out, even in countries like Mauritius, no one need unemployed. I am not unemployed. I have no job at all in this world, but I am not unemployed. Nobody pays me for doing any job in this world, but still I am not unemployed. I don't care to ascertain what you are going to give me. I don't want. I am employing myself. That's all I'm interested in. We go to the ashram, we got a little garden. I told him, who can stop me from cultivating something in the garden? If I came into your house tomorrow morning, I told you, madam, I've got some spare time, may I wash your clothes? You're not going to say, get out. You say, please, do it. It's only when I say, I'll do it for you. Will you give me $10? You'll say, no, I'll have it done for $5 to somebody else. There is absolutely no one in this world who is going to refuse a service. Absolutely no one. It's only when I begin to, you know, bargain, me, what are you going to give me? It's then conflict starts. I don't want it. Okay. She has given me the most ancient fruit in this world, apple. No, the name is mentioned in the Bible. It's alright, this will do for me for a day. Why must I quarrel with anybody? I can, the whole of tomorrow, I can serve everybody freely. Yeah, I've got an apple. There is no problem. The problem arises when the me arises, isn't it? All our problems are directly attributable to this me. I want this, I must have this, otherwise I won't do this. Well, we'll start it. If I don't use that concept at all, I am prepared to give of what I have. Whatever I have is yours. I don't think anybody will object to it. I was telling Jayadevi today of a little amusing and interesting incident. Once after an extensive tour, I was returning to my base in Mauritius. The last stop was Rhodesia. And at Salisbury Airport, I took leave of my friends. It was about 11 o'clock at night. I was walking towards the plane. It was fairly dark, not quite dark, you know, airport. Fairly dark, you know, one couldn't recognize one another. But I saw in front of me a lady walking towards the same plane. She was fairly heavy. And she had a sort of bag in her hand, largish type of bag, overnight bag type of thing, which she was carrying. And then after a few steps, she would put it down, then she would pick it up again, walk over, put it down. I thought, I had a misunderstanding. I thought because she was heavy herself, she was finding it difficult to carry this bag. I caught up with her, and while I was still about a couple of paces behind her, I said, madam, may I carry the bag? Yes, yes, yes. She didn't know me from Adam. Yes, yes, she said, very gladly, she let me take the bag, but it was very heavy. That bag was very heavy. I tried to transfer my bag, my own handbags into one hand, and I tried to lift it. It's terribly heavy. But she didn't bother at all to let me do the job. Nobody does in this world. Nobody bothers if you volunteer to do someone a favor or some service. It's only when you begin to bargain, I'll carry this bag for you, what will you give me? It's then the trouble starts. So one who has learned to keep the me away completely is always happy. And a simple and effective way to keep the me away is constantly to repeat this mantra along with the breath, associating the mantra with the breath, and then you will not give the mind the time and the opportunity and the inclination to generate this I thought. Let's do it. If you can, whatever be your mantra, if you have no mantra, you can repeat Om with your breath, with every inhalation and every exhalation. And also, I don't know if you know, if you want to, if you bother about your anatomy or physiology or whatever it is, if you can visualize the solar plexus, the center of your body, and from there, a nerve running right through the center of your body into, it's just in front of the spinal column, just in front of the spinal column, running right through from the solar plexus into the brain. And as you breathe in and out, this current of consciousness goes up and down with the mantra.
त्र्यंबकं यजामहे सुगंधिं पुष्टिवर्धनं उर्वारुकमिव वंदनां भुज्योर्मुक्षीयमामृतात् ओं त्र्यंबकं यजामहे सुगंधिं पुष्टिवर्धनं उर्वारुकम् इव वन्दनान् मृत्योर्मुक्षीय मां तात् ॐ त्र्यम्बकं यजामहे सुगन्धिं पुष्टिवर्धनम् उर्वारुकमिव वन्दनान् मृत्योर्मुक्षीय मां तात् सर्वेषां स्वस्ति भवतु सर्वेषां शान्तिर्भवतु सर्वेषां पूर्णं भवतु सर्वेषां मङ्गलं भवतु सर्वे भवन्तु सुखिनः सर्वे सन्तु निरामया सर्वे भद्राणि पश्यन्तु मा कश्चित् दुःखभाग् भवेत् असतो मा सद्गमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मा अमृतं गमय ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति।